Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Kristi Noem unveiled a back-to-normal plan for South Dakota Tuesday, stressing she wants to put decision-making into the hands of people. Schools and businesses would be allowed to host small gatherings while continuing to encourage social distancing. However, it's not a one-size-fits-all plan. New outbreaks will preclude the plan from being initiated where there is a threat to public health. So, do you have a full understanding of the governor's plan and how it works? We're joined today by Dakota Political Junkies. We've got John Schaff. He is with us from Aberdeen, where he's a professor of political science at Northern State University. Welcome back, John.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Tom Dempster. He served District 9 in the South Dakota State Senate for 4 terms. Tom, thanks for the time today.
Good afternoon, Lori.
I'm going to start with the back-to-normal plan, and we're going to play a little audio clip from when Governor Noem was talking with Sean Hannity about this plan. And let's take a listen, and then we'll talk a little bit about how this reads nationally and then what it really means here in the state.
In South Dakota, we didn't close any businesses. We didn't do any shelter in place. I trusted my people. They trusted me to make decisions that were best for us, and they've just done an absolute fantastic job. That's why my plan is not a reopening plan. It's a back-to-normal plan. We're working our way back towards getting the life in South Dakota that we love again, and I'm giving them guidance to do that.
All right. That's the message that the nation is hearing about South Dakota in South Dakota. It's pretty much the same message, but clearly nuanced because we know that 28,000 people have filed for unemployment, and it's not quite as if there were a lot of businesses that did close, even though they didn't have to. John Schaff, as you look at this plan, what stands out to you about the governor's message? And now she's announced there's no press conference today. What are some of your initial thoughts about this plan?
Well, precisely, sort of going on what the governor told Sean Hannity last night. If I could give the governor's staff, it's too late now, a nickel's worth of free advice, is I think the back to normal plan was probably a bit of a misnomer. Because for one thing, as the governor's right about this, from the point of view of state policy, in a lot of ways, not a lot is changing. So there's nothing to go back from because the state was relatively hands off. But I think what you get nationally sometimes, and the governor alluded to this a bit on Hannity last night, but it could be misleading. You know, there's a reason why I'm talking to you on the phone from my basement instead of at the Tom and Daniel Amen studio at Northern State University. Yeah. I'm not allowed in that room. There's a reason that my kids aren't allowed to play on public playground equipment in Aberdeen, which is wrapped in police tape. As you say, all those people have filed for unemployment. So it's not like South Dakota is doing nothing. But it is true. What I take the governor and watching the governor's press conference yesterday, I think what she's saying is that the state is changing its advice to being relatively severe advice of being extremely careful. And while it's true there was never a shelter at home order, we were advised to shelter at home. That was the advice given. And what the governor is saying is most South Dakotans have followed this advice and we have done well. And the advice now is changing that maybe you can gather in small groups. Businesses can open as long as there aren't too many people in the business and they're prudent in how they go about doing disinfecting, this sort of thing. And that's what I'm getting from the governor is she's trying to signal to the people of South Dakota, maybe loosen up a little bit as you go about what has been a very restricted daily routine. Maybe that daily routine can expand somewhat. And so it's not really back to normal. It's just back to less weird is how I would describe it.
Oh, if only we had called it the back to less weird plan. We would have had.
That would not have been my advice, but I didn't word smith that before I uttered it. So, but something along those lines.
It's going to stick now, John. You never know. Somebody's going to tweet it out. Tom Dempster, your thoughts on the governor's initiative and really the message that the nation is getting and the message that South Dakotans are getting and why that matters, what message the nation gets.
Some time ago, on my way to the airport in Maui in Hawaii, I came upon a surfing beach. And I've never seen waves like that in my life. And I've never seen people surf like that in my life. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And I cannot imagine the thrill at being atop one of those waves. That's one of the problems, in my opinion, that you have when all of a sudden the national media finds a star and starts paying attention to you. Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal, in her column probably, three or four weeks ago, notably about Governor Walsom, I think, in California, Governor of New York, talked about these governors now becoming instant celebrities, and she gave an admonition and said, don't let this turn your head. Don't let this, all of this newfound attention give you so much confidence that you, well, like the surfer in Maui, all of a sudden find a wave that you cannot catch and tumble hard. I think the governor has done a good job in terms of a focused message. She's done a good job in terms of consistently telling people the truth and to stay out of harm's way. But all of this attention that you get on a national basis can create some hubris that I think can ultimately detract from a capacity to do a job well in South Dakota.
How, I'm wondering, does the narrative have to include tourist season, the impacts of being open for tourist season, and perhaps even continuing to go on with planning for fireworks over Mount Rushmore on the 4th of July, because we're looking at coming up on May 1st. And John, do you think that there is a connection to what we're saying in the nation to who we want to invite to the state in the days ahead? And is Tom right? Is that riding on top of a wave that we might regret being on top of?
Well, it depends on how this plays out, because one of the things I think we're finding is, for example, I was one of the people who, you know, around spring break time about 5-6 weeks ago, when we saw people being quite foolish in Florida, thought that Florida was going to be a complete disaster, and it hasn't really worked out that way. It, of course, hasn't been a picnic, but it hasn't been the disaster people have thought. And one of the things we're seeing now, as if, for example, they've reopened beaches in Florida, is that being outside is one of the best things you can do. One thing just for your general health and your own immune system, of course, is strengthened by being outside in the sun. But also it's very hard to transmit the virus outdoors. And, of course, Mount Rushmore is outdoors. Now, what is that going to do? So some of the tourism that happens in the state really could go on with very limited problems. But some things, you know, when people start going to shops, when they start going to some of the tourist attractions, which are inside in very close quarters, I can think of the mobs I've been through at Reptile Garden with my kids, and I don't think that's something I want to do in this day and age. We'll see how those come about and whether those are the kinds of things that reopen, because I think people walking around our state parks or doing the walking path around Mount Rushmore is probably relatively safe. It's just in all those secondary things, and that's probably really more so what drives our tourist business, drives the tourist dollars, because most of the walking around is free. What really impacts the state economically is when people go into Keystone and they buy their T-shirt, you know, that sort of thing. And whether people are going to be doing that or not, I think is the big question.
If we have fireworks at the 4th of July, though, there's not a lot of room to walk around because that's thousands and thousands of people.
It's a question of whether people are there. If there are people there, where are they and how tight are they together? Because then you look at the pictures, the overhead pictures, say, of beaches in Florida, and people are doing a pretty good job of spacing themselves. Of course, at Mount Rushmore, you've got the amphitheater. It's not wide open. know how people are going to go about this and where you're going to watch from, I think, would be the question. So there's not – obviously, fireworks themselves are not a problem. They can do what they want. It's a matter of how do people congregate in order to view those fireworks, because we don't light off fireworks just for the sake of fireworks. They're for viewing. So how do people go about that viewing?
Yeah. And you mentioned photographs. I was looking at some analysis of how photos are taken. If you take a picture from a different angle, it kind of looks like people are crowded. And if you take it from another angle, they're really actually standing far apart. So there's certainly, messages that are trying to be sent with the way people position their cameras and tell this story. Tom, anything about the 4th of July and sort of what it symbolizes to have, because this has been, since Governor Kristi Noem became governor, asking President Trump to bring them back. There's this, whole controversy about the environmental impact, which is now been resolved in a report that says, we can go forward with this. We've got the pandemic. We've got South Dakota. There's just a lot that's feeding into this coming date. What are your thoughts for us to look for when we go forward? We're also in an election year, and fireworks over the over Mount Rushmore that President Trump brought back for the 4th of July says something pretty epic, doesn't it?
Well, there's nothing more I think there are a few things even throughout the world that are more recognizable than Mount Rushmore. And it would be quite something to, as a candidate for anything, it would be quite something to pose oneself in that position as fireworks are exploding over Mount Rushmore. It's a national park. I'm going to guess any president would have that prerogative to do that. But we already have a template that demonstrates how you can do that successfully, and I think that was in South Sioux City this weekend. Is you can do all of that. You can have your car races, especially in an open state, but probably shouldn't have any participants there and go ahead and have a display.
I want to make sure that we also talk about some news that we shouldn't lose track of, and we'll start with you, John Schaff, and that is when we go back to veto day with the South Dakota State Legislature. There were some accusations made against Senators Langer and Greenfield about consumption of alcohol. A committee investigated that, and we haven't talked about it yet. So give us a little overview, John, of what was revealed during that investigation.
Well, last week there was an investigative committee meeting of the South Dakota Senate. And the two senators, Langer and Greenfield, were there virtually, as were most of the senators were there virtually. Only a small handful of people were actually in peer, including our former Attorney General, Marty Jackley, who was serving as defense counsel, you might say, for the accused. And what I got out of that is one thing, there seemed to be some bad blood between the House and Senate side. Certainly got that. And there was a bit of a who's on first routine about timelines, about what time things happened, and then exactly how long was the House waiting for the Senate to do his job, and how much of that was because the accusation that Senators Greenfield and Langer, who are the two leaders of the South Dakota Senate, were intoxicated. That's the accusation. The upshot was that, right at the beginning, both the senators basically admitted that they had been drinking, not on Capitol grounds, but at a lobbyist's house quite near the Capitol grounds, as I understand it. And so they may have been, in some extent, under the influence. Mr. Jackley made the point over and over that there was no blood test. There's no proof that they were intoxicated, other than people's assumptions based on actions. And then what ended up happening was the after all the testimony is the committee had an argument over, or a discussion, I should say, whether they should censure or admonish the senators, and they chose to admonish was the language of the resolution, which is slightly below censure. And so it just seems like it's sort of a black eye that probably Senators Greenfield and Langer made some extraordinarily bad choices. They admitted as much, and they admitted that they had been drinking, and which somewhat contradicts what Brock Greenfield told the Senate on the night of veto day when he said that no one had been imbibing. Well, that's not true, which again he admitted. And so it just seems like some bad behavior. And I think some of the discussions that's going to come out of this is a little bit about how the legislature polices itself. And Tom could probably speak to that more intelligent than I can since he's been a legislator. But this practice of free drinks from lobbyists is now coming under scrutiny, it looks like. And you wonder if there's going to be some rule changes about not just drinking at the Capitol, but it being on the job under the influence, which if I did that as a state employee, I'm in big trouble. In fact, even with tenure, that is a fireable offense if I am on campus intoxicated, but apparently not if you are a member of the South Dakota legislature. So we'll see if some of that changes.
Tom, what happens going ahead? Because it's one of those news stories that a lot of South Dakotans are going to miss because of the news cycle that we're in. But lawmakers aren't going to forget about it at all come next session. What do you think the real consequences are going to be for Senator Langer and Senator Greenfield?
Well, I mean, stepping back, I mean, there's never anything wrong with "I did it, I'm sorry." That's probably always a good place to start. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, I judge my candidates, I judge my political officials on four characteristics. One, temperance, prudence, wisdom, and justice. And I told my friend, I said, oh my, you've been reading your Aristotle, haven't you? And so, sure, there was a lack of temperance, there was a lack of prudence, there was a lack of wisdom, and I suppose there will certainly be justice. Because it is the majority leader, because it is the president pro tem, both very significant positions that you don't get for the asking. These are positions that you have to earn from your caucus. Because they are at the top of leadership, that means that they will both spend some time in purgatory. Both of them are certainly capable. Both of them are people that you would trust. They made a mistake. They're going to be in purgatory for a while. We'll see what happens this election, presuming that they run again, which I would hope that they would. But we'll certainly see what happens to the leadership elections. But for sure, they will spend some time in purgatory.
Tom, there's no rule against, drinking on the job in the state for state lawmakers? Should there be?
I would argue that that's a misnomer. I mean, that happens, but it happens very rarely. I mean, I've been around for a long time, and when I was a student in the 60s or in college in the 70s, you'd always hear stories about people riding their horses up the Capitol steps. Pierre is a much saner place, at least in my experience, being in the Senate for 8 years, than what it was 20, 30 years ago. Yes, having been in leadership, there are occasions when you would have private conversations with your members and say, oh, I think you were under the influence at this particular committee meeting or whatever, or even not a committee meeting, just be careful. You'd have those conversations in any kind of big group, in any kind of big group that you have. But it's all about temperance, all about prudence, all about wisdom, all about justice. Sometimes you fall away from that.
John Schaff and Tom Dempster, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate your time as always. Stay healthy.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Tom.